Well, good morning, everyone. Here from the Temple of Silence in Finland. And we have been looking at externalization of the hierarchy. We're on program 51. And we stopped at an Easter message. And our date today is the 21st of May. And we have, at least in this document, another roughly 250 pages to go. It'll be a while. But we've been looking at the possibilities that have been present with us from 1945, March, April, and here is Easter Day, 1945, and it looks like it's near the end of March. So let us get into this new message. Easter Day, 1945. On this day, we recall to our minds, on this day, we recall to our minds the fact of resurrection, a universal and eternally recurring resurrection. It's kind of the Aries energy that comes once a year, and it is raising all things into the new new cycle. Resurrection, as it occurred in the tomb where the initiate Jesus was buried, is not the same resurrection as we find connected with the seventh initiation. That occurs rather later. The Christ, even now, has not completed that resurrection, although in symbolic terms, he sits at the right hand of the Father in Shambhala, and the Buddha is a resident of Shambhala. So it says here, I would like to talk with you, anent the Christ, about his work as head of the hierarchy and about the rebuilding which humanity must undertake and which the hierarchy is seeking to impulse at this time. A great period of reconstruction is planned. You know, not just restoration, but reconstruction under Gemini. A great period of reconstruction is planned, and here are two words around which I wish to create my theme. Resurrection and reconstruction. And I'm thinking that the in 1943, the energy of love reached a high point, and the Christ, I think, made steps in this long process called the seventh initiation. And I believe committed himself to return in bodily form in a Maya Virupa after the war was completed and during the greater part of the Aquarian Age. It will be a reconstruction implemented by those who know the meaning of resurrection. And it will involve a resurrection of humanity through the medium of its intelligentsia and men and women of goodwill. Now, I suppose, in a sense, we have been undergoing that type of resurrection, though it's certainly far from complete. These two groups, the hierarchy and humanity, will need to be brought into closer rapport. And this is entirely possible if the followers of the Christ realize their opportunity and shoulder their responsibilities. Notice the followers of the Christ, those who, in Master Moria's terms, ally themselves with Thomas a Kempis and engage in the imitation of Christ. So our task as members of the new group of world servers or applicants to those positions, our task is to bring humanity closer to the hierarchy by executing as much of the divine plan as we possibly can in our individual life and in our group life. Okay. So this is possible. And then he's going to elaborate a little bit on the idea of followers of the Christ. I would point out that when I use the phrase followers of the Christ, I refer to all those who love their fellow men, irrespective of creed or religion. Only upon this basic premise can a hopeful promise, hopeful future be founded. So he's not talking about any particular membership in a church or any particular denomination. It's got to be those who love their fellow men, irrespective of any creed or religion. And naturally, this will include many who are not a member of any particular church, and it will include people who are members of other religions altogether. This is something we have to have in mind and really seems to be beyond the grasp of those who are addicted to their particular approach to Christianity or to other religions, when they are narrow, dogmatic, and non-growthful. I do not care whether or not those who read my words accept the occult teaching of a spiritual and planetary hierarchy over which the Christ presides, or whether they think in terms of the Christ and his disciples. The essential recognition for which I plead is that this great group of spiritual individuals who receive so general a recognition throughout the world and in the world, all the great religion should be regarded as active. And that's page 469. The Christian view of the Christ is built upon that which he enacted for us 2,000 years ago, and through which he symbolically indicated to us the way which all aspirants must go. It portrays a picture of a waiting, quiescent Christ living in some vague and faraway heaven, resting on his laurels and practically doing nothing very much until such time as the sons of men in every race and creed proclaim him as Savior. Well, obviously, this view. Not sufficient. They must do both as individuals and as representing the organized Christian church. It is a picture of a listening, observing Christ, animated by pity and compassion, but who has done all he could and now waits for us to do our part. It is a picture of one who waits to see what humanity as a whole will accept theologically. Here the Tibetan is pointing out the difference between the real Christ and his activities and duties presently and the picture which many Christians hold. It is also a picture of one who waits to see what humanity as a whole, yes, will accept theologically. In the mind of the narrow fundamentalist theologian, Christ is seen as presiding over a peaceful place called heaven, into which the elect are welcomed. Elect, election, choosing, but more insidious than that, the what D.K. calls the damnable doctrine of the elect of God, those who from the first were predestined to be saved as others were predestined to be damned. He calls it a damnable doctrine. He, the Christ, is also seen as consigning all who remain aware of their own spiritual integrity and responsibility, who refuse to be gathered into organized churches, or who go idly or wickedly through life to some vague place of eternal punishment. This is the hell of the Abrahamic religions. To this vast multitude, probably the majority, his love and compassion apparently do not reach, and his heart remains untouched. Which, of course, is in defiance of everything that the Christ is known to be by the true servants of the Christ, the true knowers of the Christ, the initiates of the first and second degree, at least. It appears that he cares not whether they suffer eternally or attain complete annihilation. Well, this is a very contradictory view, and yet somehow unthinkingly accepted by so many. If you believe, you go to heaven, and if you don't, you go to hell. So the Tibetan says, this surely cannot be so. None of these pictures is accurate or adequate. They are not true in any sense of the word. This is being realized by the more intelligent of the world thinkers, and from the time of the full moon of June, Gemini here, celebrated this year the last week of May. So this is certainly a tropical Gemini, a different message must be sent out by the churches of Christendom if they are to meet the need of mankind and so aid in the work of reconstruction which lies ahead. They cannot stop this work, but the churches could be ignored if an inability to think with clarity is shown and if they are not freed from theological narrowness, ignored eventually by the many. And not stimulated by hierarchy. None of these pictures is adequate. They are not true in any sense of the word. Having a real or a vision of the Christ as he is, and none of us can do that completely, but having a vision of the Christ as he is so important for those who are deeply committed to a particular Christian sect or religion. It's important for all humanity. A real view of the hierarchy is indispensable. Master Moria says something like, "Must I shout it in your ears, or must we shout it in your ears?" Hierarchy, he says. So the churches make themselves irrelevant if they don't come closer to the hierarchical point of view. Now, there are many fundamental churches today. They seem to be undergoing a renaissance, rising due to the fear of the people and their tendency towards judgment and their liking of the fact that they are among the saved and others are not, which is a question then of pride. Many non-virtues keep the churches of the present day as they are and will not allow them to evolve. It's better to be secure in your thoughts and incorrect than it is to really grow and use one's insecurity to advance into a better understanding of reality. Of course, I speak with irony in the first part of this statement. Resurrection is the keynote of nature, and death is not. Death is only the antechamber of resurrection. And there we have to ponder rather deeply. It is always the rising again in life that is the keynote, the truth. Resurrection is the clue to the world of meaning, that's the world of the soul, right? And is the fundamental theme of all the world religions, past, present, and future. That's so important. The world of meaning is the world where the soul is found. And let's see, I seem to have a... Yeah. resurrection of the spirit in man in all forms and all kingdoms is the objective of the entire evolutionary process, and this involves liberation from materialism and selfishness. We have descended from the universal logos, which we are in essence, and we have grown more narrow in that descent, much more narrow. We have become immersed in prakriti, in the material states, and resurrection is our way of monadic retraction, emanative retraction, and arising again, plus our experience, into the heights from which we descended long ago. So we're going to stop the highlighting. In that resurrection, evolution and death are only preparatory and familiar stages. DK tells us that when we die, we will recognize very familiar circumstances. So we always rise again out of the physical body, and we rise into subtler spheres where the scope of our thought and activity is released from the trammels of matter. The note and message sounded by the Christ when last on earth was resurrection. But so morbid has been mankind and so enveloped in glamour and illusion that his death has been permitted to sidestep understanding. Consequently, for centuries, the emphasis has been laid upon death, and only on Easter Day or in the cemeteries, which he calls psychically unhealthy places, is the resurrection acclaimed. All of this, our particular approach, this must change, he says. And the fear of death will be overcome, I think, within a couple of centuries, and proof first of survival and then of reincarnation will come. It's going to be one of the major tasks of the scientific servers to prove both survival and reincarnation, and eventually to prove the existence of the soul on the higher mental plane. Of course, these planes have to be recognized, which thus far they are not. They seem to be some epiphenomenon of matter, which they are not. You'd be surprised at the number of people who think that all things psychological and spiritual arise from matter. Those things do not. And even so materialistic is the bias that even these intelligent people remain unconvinced that even a possibility exists, that the higher states are independent of matter. They are connected with matter, but they exist whether the lower forms of matter exist or not. So all of this must change. Morbidity, a tendency towards the worship of death, There are many people who seem to love decaying conditions, food, etc., more than they love health, vitality, resurrection, ascension, dwelling in a higher place. It is not helpful to a progressive understanding of the eternal verities to have this condition perpetuated. And people will be fighting to the bitter end to preserve what they consider to be the rectitude of their narrow points of view. We need to be characterized by progressive understanding. Is our understanding progressive? Or are we perhaps just as attached to certain theosophical, esoteric dogmas as church members are to their particular creeds? Always the formulation of the truth is temporary and limited. And even at the very height, the very top of the universe, if I may say, the conception possible is drastically limited compared to the absolute infinitude of the super-universal deity. The hierarchy is today dedicated to bringing about this change and thus altering the approach of mankind to the world of the unseen and to spiritual realities. So that when we present esotericism and the marvelous possibilities that exist within it, we are cooperating with the hierarchy and disabusing the narrow minds of their temporary but illusory security found in their unchanging dogmas. D.K. pretty well tells us that what he has written is only the ABC of esotericism. He's not going to tell you that the secret doctrine was the last word. He's not going to tell you that cosmic fire is the last word or anything written with Alice Bailey. We remember what she said, how working with the Tibetans' dictation, she saw vistas which never entered the books, but which took their birth from the hints that DK gave about those ABCs. There's also the XYZs, you know. And even then, it's only one universe, which is an absolute infinitesimal when compared with the absolute infinitude of super universal God. The God that transcends the universe he has become, or it has become. You can't say he, you can't say she. That's just a convention. Okay. Before, however, they could do anything. Our present civilization had to die. It's dying. The law is withering, and the Piscean civilization is dying. Its values have, in some minds, been preserved, but its ways are being put to the side, though some cling and thereby prevent the onset of the new. During the coming century, that's our century now, the meaning of the resurrection will be unfolded, and the new age will reveal its true significance. Well, we have 80 years remaining in this century. By the end of this century, esotericism must have won at least the initial phases of its rightful position. And then we will look for reality in an entirely new way and not be bound by materialism the way so many actually intelligent people still seem to be. The first step will be the emergence of humanity from the death of its civilization, of its old ideas and modes of living, the relinquishing of its materialistic goals and its damning selfishness, meaning a selfishness which holds back progress, and its moving into the clear light of the resurrection life. Or, you know, I might be tending to say resurrected life. So our civilization is dying, and there will be much grief in the dying of it, as every human possibility will seem to be dying too, at least in the minds of those who do not see or sense the impending revelation. Now, he says, I'm not here speaking in symbolic or mystical terms. I am dealing with facts, facts as real and as imminent as the coming cycle of conferences, and facts for which the past 200 years, I guess since approximately 1750 or 1775 maybe, have prepared humanity. I'm dealing with facts. So let's accent that. Yes. The old is slipping away. And those who are adhering to the old are slipping away as well, and may spend a long time out of incarnation. Before their time comes again for their ashram and their ray to make its reappearance in better ways than it departed. So selfishness holds us back. Love, wisdom, and the spiritual will bring us forward into resurrected life. Materialism holds us in prison, and we have to examine ourselves carefully about that. There's all kinds of materialism and all kinds of covetousness, as we find in the Yoga Sutras, the light of the soul. One can covet that which is material, but if one covets anything in the dense physical body of the, let's say, planetary logos, or even the solar logos, it is materialism. So the subtle worlds are also material. We have to understand that as well. So this preparation going on for the last 200 or so years from the time this was written has culminated in the restlessness of the 20th century and has led to the horror of this world war He sees it in larger terms, 1914 to 1945, through which we have been passing. I suppose before there is advancement, there always is a sense of unease, especially among those who are more awakened, and maybe they know the source of their unease. Maybe others are simply uneasy and do not know why. The true work of the cycle of conferences about which I wrote earlier will be inaugurated in San Francisco. You know, this is really the root of the founding of the United Nations, at least the root within mankind. Obviously, just the way Master Serapis and the Master Jesus and a certain Colonel House and a certain aspirant by the name of Woodrow Wilson saw to the founding of the League of Nations, so subjective founders of the United Nations must obviously be there. And I wouldn't at all be surprised if the Christ chooses as his headquarters, when again he reappears in the flesh, the United Nations. And I tend to think not so much Geneva, though it is a great second-rate center, but I tend to think of New York, a second-rate city in terms of its soul. But of course, Geneva is the second-ray planetary center. I don't see the Christ reappearing in anything but the planetary centers in terms of using those centers as a headquarters or a base. But speculation about that is best left to the hierarchy that knows, and not to us who merely anticipate or look for probabilities, speculate. There in San Francisco, long ago, 75 years ago, there, the stage will be set for those processes which will usher in an era of relative tranquility. Well, we've had wars in the 20th century, and who's to say when the tranquility will come, that greater peace, maybe in the 21st century, maybe beyond. And thus, the door of the dark cave of materialism will be opened, and the stone rolled from the door of the sepulcher, which has too long entombed mankind. Well, he's speaking in symbolic yet very recognizable terms. We can speak not only of the literal entombment of the body of the initial Jesus and the rolling away of the stone, which I suspect normal human beings could not do. He's speaking of the condition of humanity as a whole and its entombment, its embalmment. He did say that the mysteries of Masonry are safely embalmed in the various rituals and so forth, but they have to come to life, of course. And some groups are trying to bring them back to life. And then we'll follow those steps which will lead to a new and better life, and which will indicate the expression of the spirit of resurrection about which we spoke a little in the last program, or maybe the one before that. These facts, so near to manifestation, are physical facts. They will demonstrate as such if the disciples of the world recognize what it is that the Christ desires, and if the men and women of goodwill implement their response to his wishes. Well, this is a, is it not a call for our cooperation? Is it not? The dark cave of materialism. There are forces right now which seek to plunge us again into that cave, and you can see the dividing line. The people of the personality, if I can call them that, just don't get it. And they are stuck in the past and addicted to an appreciation of the obvious and not the subtle and spiritual. And so humanity would never go forward if those people grasp power and remain in power. The goodness of humanity must eject them, whether to vote them out or to throw them out. It must happen, because the implications of materialism will become ever more clear. The dividing line is now being ascertained. And it's tough to live through when one sees the recrudescence of all those things that one knows will not and cannot work. But how to abide that? You know, to realize that this division between the tendencies left and right must be shown to humanity. It is unpleasant to be in the midst of a reversal of apparently achieved virtue. But it is necessary because people must awaken. So DK says, these are facts. And there will be a resurrection of humanity. These are facts. And there will be a resurrection of humanity. Now, speaking symbolically, he says, I'll try to get this up a little bit so that it's more even with. The direction. Speaking symbolically, the first step after the advent of the spirit of resurrection will be similar to that in the Bible story. Now, we remember this spirit of resurrection, though having very high roots, is under the direction of the Christ, and so can be seen perhaps as a member of hierarchy or even of Shambhala. Speaking symbolically, the first step after the advent of the spirit of resurrection will be similar to that in the biblical story. Mary, that woman of sorrow, of experience and of aspiration, stands as ever in the symbolism of the world as the symbol of materialism. And humanity must say with her, they have taken away my Lord, and I know not where they have laid him. So here is an assessment of Mary, probably not Mary Magdalene, who more and more is looked upon as a disciple of high standing, but the mother, Mary, I suspect. And she grieves over the loss of the body of Jesus, his burial, perhaps. She does have sorrow. She does have experience. She has aspiration, but she still loves the form. And so does humanity. But she said it to the Lord himself. Not recognizing him and realizing only her own deep need and despair. So what this is all about is after the resurrection. Yes, the body has been removed. And she's actually speaking, I think, to the Christ in a light form, or if in the form of a resurrected Jesus, she doesn't recognize it. So she is speaking after the resurrection. The body is no longer in the sepulcher. And so must it be again. Humanity, materialistic, very much under the third-ray personality of this earth, suffering. We in the Western world, well, everyone suffers, and every heart has its bitterness, as Master DK tells us. But we don't suffer as those who live in a state of great privation, living off the garbage heaps. So must it be again, humanity, materialistic, suffering, facing the future with despair and agony, but still aspiring, must go forth from the cave of matter, seeking the Christ, and at first not recognizing him or the work he is attempting to do. So Mary did not recognize the Christ. Now, I suppose the question remains, would he be in his Maya Virupa, or would he be using the form of the initiate Jesus? The latter seems to me to be the case. Because later he meets with his disciples, and had he been in his Maya Virupa, they wouldn't have recognized him whatsoever. And in fact, they did finally recognize him. The churches, materialistic, hidebound, and submerged in their theological concepts, seeking political power or possessions, you know, for instance, the third-ray personality of the Catholic Church, emphasizing stone buildings and cathedrals, which they wanted to rebuild after the war exactly as they had been. You know, Notre Dame had a great fire recently, and the desire is to rebuild it just as it was. Emphasizing stone buildings and cathedrals while neglecting the temple of God not made with hands, eternal in the heavens, namely the causal body. Neglecting the true edifice that is internal to every human being. It's in a way what makes the human being human. But the causal body has had a long history. I'm forgetting right now, but its building seemed even to precede, to a certain extent, individualization. Maybe I can find that reference. The building up, at least, of the mental unit certainly preceded individualization. So the churches are occupied with the symbols and not with the reality. And that is so true of Masonry as well, unless special effort is made to, in certain types of Masonry, to unlock those symbols so that they reveal the truth they are meant to indicate to those who are wise enough to see the truth. Now there are Masonic lodges such as the Ancient Universal Mysteries, perhaps others, that are digging deeply, deeply into the symbolism and interpreting it in terms of esotericism. Now they, these churches, must learn to recognize that the Lord is not with them. Not if they stick to their old and limiting habits, and they too must go forth, as Mary did, and seek him anew. If they will do so, they will surely find him and again become his messengers. So the symbolism definitely holds. The sadness over the body that is no longer there, but the need to seek him where he really is, in the spiritual world. The figure that Mary encountered was told not to touch him. I suppose there would have been a danger given the light and electrical phenomena. But later, as I've said, doubting Thomas, that example of the skeptical fifth ray, one of the disciples, was told to put his finger in the wound. And so that would have been a different appearance and one that was much more like the body of the real Jesus. The fact of the resurrection will be demonstrated during the next few centuries. And the living Christ will walk among men and lead them onward towards the Mount of Ascension, presumably the sixth initiation. Well, many initiates of the fifth degree, at least, will be needed to guide humanity properly through the Aquarian Age. The Pentecost will become truth. This is the second initiation. And the tongues of fire will descend, and those human beings who are ready will take the second degree. And they will communicate with each other in a way that is hard to understand for those who have not taken that initiation. All men will come under the tide of inspiration from on high in the Aquarian Age. And though they may speak with many tongues, as in the Pentecost, they will understand each other. You know, I couldn't help but notice recently advertised a certain Japanese invention which sort of allows you to speak 43 languages, something like that. And I guess it's one of those translating mechanisms that allows you to interpret anything said in terms of many languages. Well, it will be literally true that the means will be evolved or invented, whereby the worst effects of the Tower of Babel that divided human communication will be overcome. That is, of course, a symbolic story. And the division of languages has seen to the isolation of many types and to their relatively independent development. Independent of the influences of others, because when you don't speak the language, you have different lines of evolution. but there will be a coming together of the many parts, and all the pieces in the jigsaw puzzle will fit. Now, I think we're quite close, so there's no sense going further. We have page 468, and we've come up to 472. And I'm going to bring this down as we prepare for program 52. There's still quite a bit left. And also, I began working this book not at the very beginning, but some tens of pages into it. So I'll have to go back and capture that at some point here. This is the end of number 51 and approximately 1 hour. And it's from 468 up to 472. And it is done on May 21st. And program 52 is coming up when I can get to it. And we don't know what, when that will occur, but hopefully quite soon. And I'll just put this down as XX. All right, friends. So that's, I think we're a little bit under an hour here. This is kind of a historical book, and certain essays were written. Not books per se, and these essays were gathered into this book we call The Externalization of the Hierarchy. That's what we're all working for. It will occur. The decision has been made, but with it, the degree of hospitality with which, in general, the hierarchy is received will depend on the work of a lot of us who are bound to educate humanity using the forces of enlightenment so that they can indeed reconstruct the world along sounder lines, in line with the plan which was once known and has now will have been restored. It's a big paradigm shift. The assumptions will change, and many will give up their old adhesions, their old addictions, their old clinging to what is not growthful. Not all will do that. There will always be the reactionaries, and they will hold on to what they consider to be the last word. And they will be very surprised when at last forced to relinquish that kind of adhesion, they find something much, much better and truer. But they will fight just the way the economic interests will fight to the last ditch to preserve their prerogatives. The old order is leaving. The United States, it turns out, is the heir to the Piscean sixth ray civilization. There will be battles, for instance, for democracy, a great second ray method of government within the United States. I heard a far right radio commentator say that a great war is coming. Prior to Election Day of 2020. Now, whether it actually is working out as a kind of civil war or whether it's a psychological war with accompanied by some violence, I would suspect we will have to see. But we have to live through this. And in this century, already a newer and better way should be indicated and should be accepted by many. I cannot see the old order lasting for any significant length of time. The deleterious effect upon humanity will just be too obvious, even as it is obvious to any thinking person that at this time, the reason the United States has more cases of the coronavirus and more deaths therefrom is because of heartlessness and ineptitude at the highest ranks of a White House, a political party which seeks to preserve old prerogatives, regardless of what that means for the suffering, not only of Americans, but of people around the world. So that will go, and the question is, when it will go is dependent upon workers such as we are, and many workers who have heard nothing of occultism, but love their fellow human beings, and wish to see humanity rise. So our work is consequential. It has great consequences. And we have to prepare ourselves and engage as rapidly, intelligently, lovingly, willfully as possible to raise up the best human values and put away the ancient greeds and attachments to that which fades away and is of the form. DK talks about that, you know, don't rush from point to point nor be attached. You know, I think I can tell you what it is, and it's a good one. It's in Esoteric Psychology 2. I'll just read it to you. Rush not. So here it is. I think it is. Rush not, huh? Somewhere. Rush not from point to point, nor be deluded by the outer forms and that which disappears. Behind the forms, the weaver, capital W, stands, and silently he weaves. That's page 360 of Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2. Okay, friends, so we'll get ready to do number 52 when it becomes possible, and thank you for being here and trying to think along with me. When I read the Tibetan, I try to think. I try to think what he means and that to which I can connect any thought, because it aspects other thoughts until the entirety is unified, eventually under the spell of pure reason, a Buddhic unification. So I will now stop the recording and go forward. See you then.